Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. My name is Josh Berry. I'm a senior analyst of chronic disease prevention at ASTO, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. Thank you for joining our desk-side briefing this afternoon. To give us some introductory remarks, I'm going to turn things over to Dawn Berkowitz, the chair-elect of the TCN Executive Committee. Dawn, please take it away.
Thanks so much, Josh, and good afternoon to everyone, and thanks for joining us. As Josh said, I am Dawn Berkowitz, and I serve as the chair-elect of the Tobacco Control Network Executive Committee, and I'm also the director of Maryland's Center for Tobacco Prevention and Control within the Department of Health. On behalf of the TCN Executive Committee, I'm happy to welcome all our TCN members, partners, and others who are joining us this afternoon for what is now the fifth installment of our TCN Deskside Briefing Series, where we convene very brief 30-minute audio-only presentations, where we're able to provide technical assistance, but give everybody a break from their screens and virtual meeting fatigue. So as I said, just a brief 30 minutes, we're not gonna be running through slides and the speakers aren't gonna be on camera, but we will be recording this deskside briefing so we can share it as an archive through the resources tab on the TCN website and also through TCN News. So with that in mind, I hope everyone has the opportunity to just relax and listen to today's presentation, which is integrating tobacco cessation into behavioral health and substance misuse treatment settings. We do ask that all participants keep themselves on mute for the duration of this deskside briefing so we could eliminate the possibility of background noise, but please do use the Zoom chat function for any information sharing or discussion. And also at any time, please submit questions to our speakers and we will loop back at the end for Q&A. So with that, I am pleased to turn the floor over to our first speaker this afternoon, Tasleen Van Hatten, who has helped us in Maryland and those around the country a lot with our behavioral health efforts. Tasleen is the Senior Director for the National Council for Behavioral Health, where she has a leadership role with the CDC-funded National Behavioral Health Network. Thanks, Tasleen, for starting us off this afternoon, and I'm going to turn it over to you.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And just thank you for having me and hosting me today. And hopefully I'll be able to provide a little bit more content around integrating tobacco cessation into behavioral health treatment settings, everything from mental health to substance use disorder treatment. Again, Tasleen Van Hatten, she, hers, Senior Director of Practice Improvement at the National Council for Behavioral Health, and have the very distinct pleasure of also serving as a senior director, as was mentioned, for the National Behavioral Health Network for Tobacco and Cancer Control, a CDC-funded disparity network that really looks at the intersection of tobacco use and behavioral health populations. So I wanted to just start today, spend a few minutes really talking about this issue. And I think when starting, the most important thing to know is that the recommendations for addressing tobacco use disorder in individuals with behavioral health conditions are tried and true. And in fact, they're no different than those that we might recommend for the general population. But I think it's worth noting that they need to be utilized and applied with equity to really address the current disparities that we see, and to be rooted, and we need to be really rooted in an understanding that their application might need to be amplified or extended or often offered more often than we're used to, or to be more continuous, to have the same impact with behavioral health populations owing to three issues that I'll talk just really briefly about, right? A lack of equity and a lack of equity perspective for so long that really personalizes rather than systematizes this disparity. Of course, many of you are familiar with the predatory nature of the industry, and so that having a really significant disproportionate impact on behavioral health populations and tobacco use. And then, of course, lastly, the disproportionate impact of trauma in individuals with behavioral health conditions, and how that overall does impact the way that we integrate tobacco cessation into behavioral health treatment settings. So I'm just going to run through those three things, knowing we just have a limited amount of time together. So when I talk about that lack of equity perspective, what I really want us to note within our work is that tobacco use and tobacco use disorders are impacted by all the determinants of health. And all those determinants of health are critical in understanding what we need to do to better integrate the treatment of tobacco use into behavioral health treatment settings. So similar to all social determinants of health and equity framings, we know that personal behaviors add up to about 30% or sometimes even less on the overall cause or determinant of health. And then the resultant impact of negative health consequences, morbidity and mortality. And yet, within behavioral health treatment facilities and settings, the majority of our traditional addiction discourse and programming is really centered on individual personal health behaviors. So what that means is ultimately focusing solely on an individual's cessation attempt within and really only seeking to address those personal health behaviors without all of the other social and structural and environmental context fundamentally leaves us with these continued disparities, right? That we could only address about 30% or less of the actual determinants that we need to get at that root cause of smoking. So I think for starters, we have to really talk about and develop an approach that is at its essence environmental and then addresses clinical care, and then looks at provider approaches, and then client level and individual approaches. And of course, again, all of those really grounded on those same recommendations for addressing tobacco use disorder in the general population, right? So the same thing in behavioral health treatment settings, adopting tobacco-free facilities, grounds, policies, and looking at those in the most wide definitions, so inclusive of new and emerging products. Then, of course, integrating tobacco treatment into behavioral healthcare settings, looking at that through the implementation and integration of 5As, NRTs, pharmacological supports that we know significantly impact the successful quit attempts of individuals in the general population, as well as individuals with behavioral health conditions. Making sure that we are utilizing the quit lines and other evidence-based interventions in behavioral health treatment facilities and settings, I think, is of critical importance. Starting to think about how we integrate peer models and peer recovery models as critical. And then, of course, always thinking beyond cessation to that of having a recovery orientation. So again, all of those recommendations ultimately applied can really significantly address the larger disparity and really address what we know are some of those root causes around tobacco companies targeting of behavioral health populations so significantly. And then the other thing that I think is really important, in addition to really understanding the root cause, really understanding that we have tried and true interventions, really grounding in a health equity framework, knowing that we can't simply address just an individual's personal cessation attempt, but really set the conditions around them at the clinical and community level. And then, of course, really understanding that the prevalence of trauma and a trauma history in behavioral health treatment settings, and knowing that there is really significant linkages between exposure to adverse childhood experiences and the resultant adult smoking behaviors, duration, amount, and use, and that this dose-response relationship is critical when thinking about the way in which we want to apply these evidence-based interventions. And so I oftentimes say that we know that smoking, of course, tobacco use is addictive and that it results in nicotine addiction. But we also know, like I said, that exposure to adverse childhood experiences and trauma, which is significantly higher in behavioral health, in individuals with behavioral health conditions and in behavioral health treatment settings, correlates with first use, as well as current smoking prevalence, as well as the risk of an individual to continue to use tobacco. So we know that this really results in that significant disparity, that one in four adults have some form of mental illness or substance use disorder, but they account for 40% of all cigarettes, commercial combustible cigarettes smoked by adults. And despite overall cigarette smoking trending down in our country, we know that the current smoking rates amongst adults within a past year with a behavioral health condition is almost double that of the general population. So I believe in the latest data released from SAMHSA, we know that individuals in the general population, the rate is currently, the tobacco use rate is currently about 14%. And it's about almost 29% within behavioral health population. So that is anybody with a reported mental health or substance use disorder within this. So the additional consideration within this is simply that we know that these tried and true interventions are not applied equally in behavioral health treatment settings. So really seeking to make sure that we're furthering integration of these evidence-based interventions in behavioral health treatment settings is so critical. We are now currently at screening at above 50% in mental health treatment facilities, but we continue to lag significantly behind. Similarly, we are at about 40% for cessation counseling, and then an even lower 26% for the provision of NRTs in behavioral health treatment settings, and then even lower for other pharmacological supports at about 24%. These are pretty significantly low numbers that really, when thinking about the better and, when thinking about the best ways to enhance supports to behavioral health populations, really seeking to enhance screening, counseling, and the provision of NRTs and other pharmacological supports is critical. And then, of course, we just hit 50% of all mental health facilities being tobacco free. So again, knowing that supporting those individual attempts is critical, really building upon that to support provider and organizational level supports is critical, and then building up to really strengthening the environmental supports around smoke-free facilities and grounds are critical to making sure that we are doing our best to integrate tobacco cessation into behavioral health treatment facilities. And then, you know, lastly, what I want to close out with, because I know we have a limited amount of time, is of course just really grounding in the reality that the majority of individuals with behavioral health conditions can and want to quit smoking, and really continuing to ground in that to drive both personal, provider, organizational, and systems change is, I think, really important. We also know that individuals who use tobacco are more than two times likely to quit for good with the help of tobacco cessation medications and counseling. We know we have some really tried and true evidence-based interventions, despite applying them at very low levels. And we also know that individuals with behavioral health conditions can successfully quit at similar rates of the general population when provided with the same tools. And that in fact, the provision of those tools and supporting tobacco cessation while in treatment can enhance longer term recovery for individuals with substance use disorders overall at about a 25% greater chance of enhancing longer-term recovery, particularly from alcohol and opioids. So if nothing else, and as you move forward with your work and you think about the best ways to integrate tobacco cessation into behavioral health treatment settings, that you leave knowing that the tools exist, they're tried and true around adopting facilities to be tobacco-free, integrating tobacco treatment through 5As, NRTs, pharmacological supports, utilizing the quit lines. And then, of course, grounding in that person-centered approach, knowing that individuals with behavioral health conditions want to quit, can quit at the same rate, can quit when provided with the best clinical care available to them. And in the long term, it deeply and successfully impacts their overall long-term recovery with substances. So Dawn, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Okay, thank you so much, Tasleem, for that key information and important facts. Again, we are recording this briefing and we'll have that available. And we are going to wait until after our second presenter and take all questions at the end. So without further ado, I'm excited to turn the floor over to our second speaker, Rebecca Padilla. Rebecca is the National Manager of Tobacco Programs for the American Lung Association, where she and her colleagues work with tobacco control programs around the country. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, Rebecca, and I will turn it over to you.
Thanks so much, Dawn, and thank you, Tasleem. I just love being on this call with you. I always learn so much whenever I hear Tasleem talk about this. So, you know, as she mentioned, despite the existence of effective treatments and an overall decline in tobacco use among the general population, of course, you know, smoking rates have remained relatively static over time with individuals with behavioral health diagnosis. So that's really why our work is so important, especially that work revolving around health systems change efforts. So our team at American Lung Association has partnered with the CDC in a 5-year cooperative agreement to further efforts towards tobacco cessation and health systems change work. So now through September of 2024, our team is providing really focused technical assistance to state and territorial tobacco control programs on things like electronic health record implementation, quality measures, hospital community benefit requirements, how emerging issues impact tobacco cessation and tobacco treatment in health systems, and you know, really how to work with different strategies for breaking down challenges when working with different healthcare provider organizations and in different settings. So this year, our team really focused on the behavioral health settings and how state and territorial tobacco control program staff can work within these system structures. So we convened a health systems change group cohort over the course of the last few months. So we had a series of meetings that started taking place in January. And these meetings included 47 participants from 22 states, including state tobacco control program staff, health systems, providers and clinicians in behavioral health settings, federally qualified health center staff, community partners, and national network members. So the purpose of this peer group was really to focus in on increasing knowledge and confidence and engagement among specifically tobacco control programs and their staff on how to focus in on those unique challenges that we see in behavioral health that are related to things like organizational culture change, unique billing and documentation issues that we might come across, and other issues like quality improvement, and how do we really create program sustainability specifically in behavioral health settings. We have had some really great discussions over the last few months focusing on, you know, these specific challenges. A lot of talk has really been around organizational culture change in behavioral health settings. You know, we've seen other substance use disorders really prioritized in advance of tobacco, of course, when we know that, you know, the data shows that you know, so many individuals with behavioral health diagnoses are, you know, represent a disproportionately large portion of the tobacco market and account for as many as 50% of the annual smoking-related premature deaths. And these individuals with behavioral health diagnoses also experience cancer incidence that's like 70% higher than the general population. And that's predominantly due to tobacco use. So, you know, we've had some really great in-depth conversations. And due to this, we've scheduled a fourth cohort meeting that's going to be taking place next week. And we're going to feature a panel of participants that will be talking about their individual programs and some specific strategies that they've used. So, you know, in order to share these really great conversations with everyone, our team is going to be having a national webcast on Thursday, June 10th, to share the lessons learned from our cohort and also roll out a new resource package that our team is creating to help further your work in behavioral health settings. So we're excited for that. We'll be sure to give you more information on registration as soon as that's available. For those of you that are accessing our call today and using the chat, I'm going to share our website page with you, and you can access all of our resources here. You can also join our listserv, and that's a great way to connect with each other, to connect with all of your friends from the Tobacco Control Network, and get more information on upcoming webcasts and new resources as they roll out as well. So that webcast or that website, for those of you that are just listening in on audio, is lung.org, and it's /cessationTA. So you can connect with myself and my team there. You can also email us directly by emailing us at cessationTA@lung.org.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. And if folks want to check out the chat, I know there are a lot of resources going in there, and we could add these links in the chat as well. Thank you again, Rebecca, and again to Tasleem for your presentations. We have set aside some time for Q&A. So I'm going to turn things over to Liana Broaddus, who is an analyst of chronic disease prevention at ASTO, and she will moderate the Q&A discussion. Go ahead, Liana.
Thank you, Dawn, and hello, everyone. It does look like we've received one question in the chat box, so I'll go ahead and start with you, Tasleem. It looks like Julia has asked, are there references available for the success rate of those with behavioral health diagnoses to help with recruiting more providers?
Yes, absolutely. So I dropped a couple of references in the chat box, just so that folks can go ahead and link to both of those. And of course, they really show that individuals with different behavioral health diagnoses, when provided with those evidence-based supports that we talked about, can really have significantly increased success rates around smoking abstinence and can overall impact smoking abstinence rates. So I put two of the ones that I use the most that of course really look at the way in which smoking cessation for different diagnoses and those that are most severe are impacted.
Thank you so much for providing those references. We'll be sure to disseminate those as well when we follow up with the participants. I'll follow up with another question to you, Tasleem. Just overall, why is it important to integrate tobacco cessation into behavioral health and substance misuse treatment settings? Or in other words, what are the benefits of doing so?
Well, I would say that the benefits for doing so are, of course, that we are pursuing the best clinical care needed to really enhance the best health outcomes of all of our clients and patients. But I think the most important reason is to know that individuals with behavioral health conditions die between 5 and 25 years earlier than the general population. And oftentimes this gets said and folks hear me all the time say gets said in grants, it gets cited in reports, but very often people do not finish the sentence on that. And that's individuals with behavioral health conditions die between 5 and 25 years earlier than the general population owing to tobacco use or other tobacco-related health consequences. And so what we really see is that tobacco use is singularly and devastatingly impactful on the overall health outcomes of individuals with behavioral health conditions in a way that no other substance use or other health condition is.
Thank you so much for sharing that important information. I'll move on to Rebecca. Rebecca, what advice do you have for tobacco control programs that are looking to advocate for the addition of tobacco cessation to the existing behavioral health and substance misuse treatment programs?
That's a really great question. You know, it always goes back to that first building block is finding a really great champion within a system. And making sure that you find champions that are relevant to who you're trying to connect with. So what I mean by this is if you are trying to get, you know, buy-in from peer support specialists, you know, these are the people that are working directly with implementing programming and treatment directly to patients, finding another peer support specialist that can advocate for, you know, the importance of prioritizing tobacco alongside other substance use disorders can be really effective. Likewise, if you are speaking to a group of prescribers, finding another prescriber to get on board to be a really great champion for cessation is so important so that they can really speak at a peer-to-peer level on integration and treatment protocols is very, very important.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. And thank you to both of you for answering these questions this afternoon. We only have about a minute left, so I will go ahead and turn it back over to Dawn.
Thanks, Leanne. I did see a couple more questions come through the chat. I don't know if we have time to address those or we could send something out.
I do see something about reimbursement, and I would just like to say I'm going to drop in the chat box. We have a billing guide addendum specific to behavioral health that could be really helpful to look at, as well as in our resource library on our lung.org/cessation TA page. We have lots of other partner resources on reimbursement and billing as well.
I similarly would just add that we have a ton of information around e-cigs. I see that folks are adding e-cigs and vaping, as well as other predatory practices that I see mentioned in here with a health equity lens. At our website, bhthechange.org. So I'll drop that in here and feel free to reach out to me if you need any information on those.
Okay, great. Leanne, thank you for that moderation. And as a quick reminder before we adjourn, we always like to encourage our members to visit the TCN website at tobaccocontrolnetwork.org. There's a plethora of great resources there, includes a member directory and interactive tobacco policy map. So that's great during legislative session or if you're planning for policies, archives of all the TCN newsletters and past TCN resources and plenty of other features. So check that out at tobaccocontrolnetwork.org. And with that, I'm going to conclude today's deskside briefing. I'd again like to thank Tasleem Van Houten and Rebecca Padilla so much for joining us and illuminating us on this important issue this afternoon. I'd also like to thank our colleagues at ASTO for making this briefing possible, and as well as CDC OSH Program Services Branch for always supporting our work. In the coming months, keep an eye out for future TCN virtual learning opportunities that will help the TCN membership address many new challenges and familiar challenges that face us all in state and territorial tobacco control. If you have any questions or if you have recommendations for a future briefing topic that may be of interest, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. The best way is by email, emailing TCN at ASTO, A-S-T-C-A, STHO.org. And thank you for joining us and enjoy the rest of your day.